Log Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson show. She is an author, and she wrote, Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with world high stakes golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now, let me ask you a question. Have you ever met an inner-city school teacher? Well, you will today, and this will be an experience you'll never forget. Tell me, can you imagine what it would be like to work with teenagers every day? It would be challenging, to say the least. Have you ever wanted to know why it is so hard to stay positive all the time? And this is for whether you're an adult or a teenager. It applies to everyone. Now, would you like to learn what happens when our teens struggle and get lost? Tell me, have you ever heard of a series of books called Granddaddy's Secrets? Now, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful and how to start feeling lucky? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I'll be introducing you to my guest. He is one of my favorite guests. He's been on the show many times, and he will provide us with information, inspiration, and some really, really great advice about raising our teenagers. I'm pleased to announce that this show is now live on Talk for Media and syndicated on iHeartRadio Talk with over 55 million subscribers. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure at iHeartRadio. Our show has now had over 3.4 million listeners to date. So now it's time for you to sit back and relax as you enter the no wine zone. Pour yourself a glass of wine, get some cheese and crackers, and enjoy our show. Now let me tell you a little bit about our guest today. He is the award-winning author, speaker, educator, two-time junior Olympian wrestler, and two-time junior Olympian wrestling coach. He grew up as a student athlete. However, he admits that as a youth, he was more of an athlete than a student. Well, I can relate to that. He has now successfully completed 14 years of college and has earned 7 degrees. Yes, you heard me right. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show today, Daniel Blanchard. Hi, Daniel. How you doing?
Wonderful, January. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I am so very, very pleased to have you back on the show. It's been a while, and I can't wait to share you with all my listeners. Let's go back and give the listeners who have never met you before a little bit of the background on your success story, where it started, and who your early mentors were.
Well, thank you, Daniel. I always love being on your show, so thanks again for having me on again. This is a great show to be on. My story, boy, it's a long one. Let me see if I can shorten it. I was born in Hartford, Connecticut, which is the capital of Connecticut, down at the northern end. Really rough neighborhood. Grew up there, me and my brother, using our fists to survive. And then eventually moved over to East Hartford, where I got into sports. played football and wrestling, and I ended up winning some championships in both and went really far in wrestling. And I really like to credit those early years of youth sports. And then even when people talk about mentors, you know, they say, what kind of mentors did you have, Dan? And unfortunately, I didn't really have any mentors that I can specifically say that were mentors. However, they were like, you know, those big sports stars that I watched on TV. I was going back a while, but, you know, Roger Staubach, Terry Bradshaw, and all those guys in football. And I saw that, you know, they were doing something special. And I thought that maybe I could do something special. So I know that's not your traditional mentor, but I think that those guys gave me a little motivation. And then to fast forward, you know, I eventually somehow made it through school. I got all C's pretty much in high school. But I somehow made it through school, went to the military service, the Army first and then the Air Force, where I got to find out where some hard work really was. And then next thing you know, I was in college and succeeding in college and just kept popping off one degree after another, after another, and after another. And it just kind of makes sense to just keep going and getting them. And now here I am 14 years later, you know, with 7 degrees. So I'm pretty proud of that. But at the same time, it's also something that other people can do, whether they believe it or not.
Well, you know, I'm proud of it too, because that's a very impressive number of degrees. Now, I'm curious, you said Army, Air Force, so how does one go from the Army to the Air Force? Did you had to re-enlist twice then?
It was interesting. When I was in the Army, there was a gentleman that I was in there, a sergeant that got out of the Army, and he eventually ended up in the Air Force. And we all know that he went over to the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And then when my time was up and I got out, and, you know, I thought it was time to do other things. So I got out, and then lo and behold, one of the friends I made on the outside just happened to be an Air Force recruiter.
Okay.
So, go ahead, right? So I spent the next, like, year as a friend to him, and he would talk about the Air Force, and I already knew that one of my old buddies went to the Air Force. So I was like, what the heck? Maybe I'll give that a shot, see how that goes. So I gave it a shot, checked it out, and I said, hey, what do you know? Now I'm a double veteran of the Army and the Air Force, which is pretty cool because one of the characters, January, in my books of the Granddaddy Secrets Team Leadership book series, Granddaddy is a former World War II fighter pilot. And the interesting thing about World War II and back in the 1940s was that there wasn't really, let's say, an Air Force that stood on its own. It was really the Army. So they called it the Army Air Force.
Okay.
That's what they call it. Yeah, now today it's two different branches. You know, you get the Army branch and you get the Air Force branch. So I thought that was really cool that one of my characters ended up being a fighter pilot who was in the Army Air Force. And here I am, a double veteran of the Army, and then a veteran of the Air Force.
Well, you know, it's fascinating because, as you know, Daniel, I've been married to two pilots. One was in the Navy and one was in the Air Force. And so, anytime I see a man in uniform, I get really excited. You know, for my listeners, I wanted to share with you that Daniel teaches special education in Connecticut's largest inner city high school, where he was chosen by the AFT and CT as the face and voice of educational reform. In addition, he is a teacher consultant for the University of Connecticut's Writing Project. And as he told us and shared with us, he is a double veteran of the Army and Air Force. And he has written a fascinating series of books, and he has a unique teen leadership blog. Now, you rewrote your first book. Share with us how that came about.
I'm glad you asked that, January. Now, the funny thing is, and I'm so glad that I went back and rewrote it. You know, I wrote that about 5 years ago. And over the last 5 years, I've been writing the sequels to Feeling Lucky, which is the 10th grade story of a struggling teen. So I've been writing the sequels, the 11th grade story, the 12th grade story. And I've been writing a whole bunch of newspaper columns, blogging about it, and, you know, been speaking about it on the speaking circuit. And through the years, I've been getting, like, a lot of questions. People ask questions, I give them answers, it makes me think a little bit, and I'm like, So I've learned a lot over the last 5 years, And there's been quite a few times where I've been like, boy, you know, if I could, I'd go back. I would have written a couple of different things in that book. I would have, you know, done it a little bit differently. Uh-huh. You know, if I could just go back and, you know, have that, you know, 5 years ago back, you know, I would have definitely written something different or a couple things different in that book. And then I started thinking about it, and I'm like, wait a minute. I mean, I've always told people that good writing is really rewriting. So I'm like, well, why can't I go back? I can go back and rewrite it. Yeah, I mean, I'm always telling my students to go back and rewrite their work, and of course, they're always saying, oh, I don't want to do that, you know what I'm saying? And it's just human nature. I mentioned it to a few of my friends. You know, they too said the same thing. They're like, oh, you know how much work that would be to go back and rewrite it? One guy did say it to me years ago. He was like, listen, I think at some point, you know, you should go back and rewrite it. And I initially said, oh, that's crazy. That's a lot of work to go back and rewrite a book. But that's exactly what I did. And I'm really happy I did it because now I can tell my students, listen, not only did I rewrite that book like 30, 40 times to get it printed the first time or published the first time, but then years later I'm looking at it and going, hey, you know what? I'd like to make it better. And why not rewrite it to make it better? So I guess it's something that we can all do. We can always go back and make things better. And just as long as we're not afraid of the work. So I'm pretty happy that I rewrote it. And now I'm looking at my second book, and I'm like, hey, you know what? There's a couple things I'd like to do in that book differently. So I've already embarked on the journey of rewriting the second book as well. And if it turns out anything like the first book, you know, the first book, I'm so pleased with the final product. Mm-hmm. It's definitely better than it was 5 years ago.
Second book,
I imagine the same exact thing's going to happen. You know, I'm going to do the work. And that's, you know, that's one of the keys or secrets to success is you've got to do the work. So I'm going to do the work, and I'm going to rewrite it and get a better book that'll hopefully be out within the next year.
Oh, wonderful. I'm happy to hear that because, you know, there's no writer alive who hasn't gone through what you've gone through, but most of them are not brave enough to sit down. You know, I turned my manuscript over to an editor and pretend I had no idea what was going to ever happen again. It's a very hard thing to go re-edit. But, you know, as time goes on, you learn things and you realize actually you do things a little differently, wouldn't you, Daniel?
Oh, absolutely. And there's no way you can foresee that, you know, back 5 years. You don't know the things that you're going to learn, the people you're going to talk to, you know, the imagination that's going to be ignited through great conversations with people or great questions that they're going to ask. So, there's no fault here. It's just a natural progression that you're going to learn more things that you couldn't have possibly have known 5 years earlier. So for me, it's the whole going back and rewriting it, I think, was a great, like, example to my students and a great example to the people that follow me that, you got something that's good here. You want to make it better? You know, don't let anybody stop you from making it better. Go back and do the work and make it better.
Absolutely.
We can all do that if we put in the work.
Well, I agree with you, and we can do better with our great sponsors, and we're going to hear from them. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Daniel about how he named the series Granddaddy Secrets, and we're also going to hear about how his students are the ones who encouraged him to start writing and sharing the things with everyone that he shared with them. We'll be right back with Daniel Blanchard.
Where does all the money go? Surely you should have more to show for all the work you do. And what about the future? Heck, what about next week? Chris Miles to the rescue. Chris is a cash flow expert and the financial advocate for the entrepreneur with a reputation of getting his clients fast, life-altering results right now, not 25 to 40 years from now. Let Chris Miles show you how to quickly free up and create more cash flow with results you can enjoy today, not tomorrow. Visit MoneyRipples.com. That's MoneyRipples.com. Visit today, not tomorrow. The new book, God Reconsidered, Searching for the Truth in the Battle Between Atheism and Religion by Scott Smith, explains why both militant atheists and believers in traditional religions ignore inconvenient truths. Scott argues in favor of the insights of Gnostic Christianity. Check out www.godreconsidered.com to read a sample chapter. That's godreconsidered.com. Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shall Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor, with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shall Not Whine at Amazon.com.
Welcome back to the No Whine Zone. We're visiting with my friend and our guest today, Daniel Blanchard. And Daniel wrote a series of books on teen leadership, and he entitled it Granddaddy's Secrets. Now, share with my listeners how you came about with that name for the series.
All right, thank you, January. It's interesting how it came about, and I'd like to explain a little bit on kind of like what it symbolizes and what it means. Mm-hmm. Basically, I remember I was watching a show many years ago. Me and my wife used to watch it a lot. And it was like one of the law shows. And I think one of the head, like, lawyer guys, he was a Southern guy. And every now and then he'd say something like, my granddaddy used to say, you know, and then he'd say some kind of like little story or something he said. And there'd be some kind of lesson in there for like the criminal case that they were working on at the time that really like hit like a point home. And I just kept thinking, boy, that sounds like to me like it makes sense, like it's a respect thing, like a wisdom thing. And if if people had like their granddaddies around giving them like this advice, and for some people it might be their grandmothers, but had like grandparent around or the granddaddy around giving them advice, their life would be better. So then I started thinking about how rushed life is today for like today's parents, how hectic it is and how stressed they are. You know, like mom and dad are working. Sometimes they're working two jobs or two jobs each. They're running the kids around the sports. You know, they're stressed. And sometimes when the kids need things, the parents are too stressed trying to make ends meet, with all these responsibilities at work. But the parents maybe are too stressed to, like, see some of the kids' needs or slow down and really give the kid like a good explanation of things. Sometimes it's just like, well, just because I said so. No, get in the car, let's go, wait. You know, like one of those deals. So I started thinking that, what if, like, more grandparents were around?
Yeah.
Who weren't stressed, who already went through all the, all that, and have learned a lot of life lessons from all that. Now that they're calm, they're relaxed, they're full of wisdom, and they could just take the time to slowly explain to teens today, what's what, and how to live a better quality life and a life that's just, kinder to people and kinder to the world. So I started thinking that'd be cool. And so I started thinking that, then as a teacher, I started thinking about the whole relationship that seems to be out there where my students say, that's just another old dead person when I'm talking about Lincoln or when like a sub comes in, like we have a substitute teacher that's a former veteran himself, and people and some of the students say, he's just some old guy. What does he know? He's trying to talk to the students about what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing. And then I think that sometimes I've heard like old people say, today's kids, what are we going to do about today's kids? So I started thinking about how mutual and how beneficial that they could be to each other and how teens really do need, granddaddies. And grandparents, how they really need that in their lives, regardless of how they act, and then how teens want that, even if they're acting like they don't. So I don't think grandparents or any elderly figure who, you know, could be anybody. It could be a neighbor guy, a guy in school, or whatever.
Sure.
It's a guy, you know, on the sports team, or, you know, your football buddy's grandfather, or whatever it is. It could be anybody. That I don't want them to be scared away from today's teen. I want them to actively, you know, pursue opportunities to be involved with today's youth and not be scared away by them and realize that these teens need them, regardless of what they say or how they act. And I want today's teens to realize that they need, you know, our older generation, regardless of how smart they think they are. These teens, they think they know everything, you know? Funny thing. I had a teen that contacted me. It's a few, he's not a teen anymore. But he contacted me and said, "Hey, Mr. Blanton, how you doing? I'm trying to, you know, do all the things you taught me to do. But I got to tell you, the real world's a little tougher than high school." I'm like, yeah, I was just trying to tell you that.
Well, you know, Daniel, you sound to me like one of those teachers, and I think everyone has teachers in their life, the ones you can't, the most memorable ones, the ones you can't forget, the ones that taught you the things that you look back on. You know, I remember things, I'm in my 70s now, and I still remember Mrs. Lynch. and that was third grade. So, you know what I mean?
They stick with you, don't they?
Oh, they do. And it's funny, the older you get, the more often they come back to visit you, which is pretty, pretty special. Let's talk about how you came up with the series titles. One is Feeling Lucky. Then you came up with Feeling Good. And then I love this, Feeling Strong. How did you come up with the feeling theme?
Well, the feelings, if you notice, every single one of them starts with feeling, you know, feeling lucky, feeling good, strong. And one of the things that I've noticed over the years is many times I'm talking to my students, and I'm like, "Come on, let's go. Get your book open to page 10. We're going to start, you know, reading and talking about this." And their book would be closed. And I'm like, come on, let's go. Get your book open." And they'd be looking at me going, "Mister, I know what to do. Why are you just telling me to do? I know what to do." And I'm like, "Well, why aren't you doing it then?" You know, it's because I'm unmotivated. So I started thinking, boy, I mean, today's youth really seems unmotivated. So I started thinking, you know, what can we do to change that lack of motivation that a lot of today's youth has? And the answer came to me with emotions. You see, emotions create motion. Emotions, like, you know, give you that little fire you need, that little energy you need to get going. So that's why I decided to name all my books Feeling, because, you know, feeling lucky, feeling good, feeling strong, because, you know, you can know what to do, but if you don't do what you know what to do, then what good is it? You're not doing anything. So I think we need to get our emotions, you know, not ignore our emotions, but we need to involve our emotions in our success. And then once we, you know, involve those feelings in our day-to-day activities, we're going to do so much better in life, and we're going to have this energy that we didn't think that we had, and hopefully we're going to stop telling people, "I'm just unmotivated." You know,
yeah.
You want to hear that? You want to pull your hair out January when you hear, "I'm just unmotivated." It's like, "Oh my gosh, what are you not being motivated about? Get going." You know, I mean, geez.
Let me ask you now, where are you in the calendar year? Are you back in school, or are you getting ready to go back?
We're getting ready. We the teachers from my school here in Connecticut, we end up going in the last week of August. And some school districts have students coming in the last week of August. But I guess I'm pretty lucky because we go in the last week of August. It's just teachers. It's a week of professional development, which something is crazy. But I don't mind it. What the heck? We go back to professional development for a week, try to get our heads right. And then the following week, which is the first week of September, the kids come back in. So we're just a few weeks away now.
Yeah. That's the way I remember school in the Midwest. I went to a Catholic school, and we'd get out the end of June, and we'd go back in September. And, you know, I shared with you earlier, we're in Arizona in a very small town called Payson, and these kids go year-round school. So they only get like 8 weeks. They get June and July off, and they're already back in classes. What are your thoughts about year-round school?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I mean, in some models, I think they have the kids going to school for like 12 weeks and then a week off, and something like 12 weeks and a week off, and they say that the kids don't lose a lot of stuff over the summer because you don't have like that 8 weeks or whatever it is over the summer off. And that makes a lot of sense in some ways. But it's also, I think, in some ways very disruptive to parents. And so, you know, just the communities, because every, let's say, 12 weeks, you're going to have your kids home for a week. You're going to have to kind of find some way to have them supervised,
daycare,
some way to have them, you know, busy, daycare, you know, whatever. I mean, summer camp, what's going to happen to summer camp? What's going to happen to a lot of things I used to do, like when I wrestled in the Junior Olympics, I spent a lot of time traveling over the summer, going to different wrestling camps, going to different wrestling tournaments, traveling a lot. So what's going to happen to a lot of these summer leagues that are very, very beneficial to our youth? I mean, we've got some kids that if it wasn't for, you know, sports, they would have found all sorts of trouble to get in if it wasn't for sports. And these summer leagues, you know, make these kids, you know, they make the kids a lot better. They get the kids more excited about the sport, and they show the kids, you know, better results, so they build their self-esteem. So, I mean, you got to factor in a lot of that stuff, you know, when you're talking about that year-round. I think, you know, there's pros and cons to it. I mean, like a similar thing they're talking about is a later arrival to school, later start to school, instead of like 7 in the morning, like 9 in the morning. And they're saying that there's studies that show that teens need more sleep. You know, I said, okay, I hear you, I get that. Part of me wants to say, well, put your teen to bed earlier at night. You know what I'm saying? Put your teen to bed earlier at night. Don't let them stay up to midnight or 1 in the morning. Because I got to tell you right now, if you have like a 9 o'clock start time instead of a 7 o'clock start time, those kids that are staying up to midnight are going to be staying up to 2 or 3 in the morning. So you're going to have the same sleepy heads in there at 9 o'clock. And then you got after school sports is going to be an issue. You got dinner. You know, what are the kids going to do about dinner if they're doing sports during that time? After school busing, after school program. I mean, you know, there's always, and people just throw out these ideas, especially like a lot of these reformers January. They throw out these ideas. Let's do this. This makes sense. And it's like, well, hold on a second. Think it through. There's a whole ripple, effect. If you try to go down that road, you know, maybe we should just try to do better what we're doing right now. So,
wouldn't that be a great idea? Well, thank you for sharing the pros and cons. And I've heard so many people talk about this, and it's wonderful to hear the thoughts of an educator, someone who is out there every day on the front lines. And I'm going to share some pros about our sponsors, and we're going to hear from them. And when we come back with Daniel, he will share his website information, and we're going to talk about some of the newspaper columns that he's been writing. So we'll be right back.
Any moment we can be painfully reminded that none of us is immune from loss. Perhaps the worst nightmare of any parent is the loss of a child. When this happens to someone else, most parents quietly wonder how they could ever deal with such an inversion of the natural order. When author Donna Mebbin lost her youngest daughter, Emma, she initially wanted to give up and join her beautiful, spirited 19-year-old. But she didn't. Instead, she wrote the multi-award-winning novel, Tomorrow Comes, an amazing book in which Donna chronicles the way her family lives forward and imagines the way Emma does too, in a magical land called After. Tomorrow Comes is available on Amazon and other online booksellers. The moment after you serve your customer, what will they tell the world? Social media has us so connected that a single voice has unprecedented power to benefit and to harm. What do your customers say? Do you know? Do you respond? What do you say? For years, Steve Holtquist has been helping businesses use the internet to be more productive and successful. Now he's showing businesses how to go back to the future, fostering and empowering relationships. Learn how to work in this new world. Find Steve at InfiniteSummit.com.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable?
Someone who has touched your heart and soul. People who have faced difficult problems. People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes. People who have priceless personalities. In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
Also, I want to share with you that Priceless Personalities is now available at audiblebooks.com. And we have a Priceless Personality visiting with us today. And he is featured in one of the chapters on Priceless Personality. You know, I've interviewed hundreds of guests, and you come away from it, and some of them just stand out. Some of them are the ones you can't forget. And Daniel Blanchard, you are one of those people, and I'm so pleased to have you back with us today.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. I love being here, and I'm so honored to be in that book, Priceless Personalities. And I've read that book a couple times, and I enjoy it every time I read it. So I'll keep doing all the good stuff that you're doing, January.
Oh, I'm having a blast, and I know you are too. Before we go on, let's share, if you would please share your website information. And I've been browsing around your website today, and I'll tell you, you've been pretty busy, haven't you?
Oh, I've been very busy, Jaren. This whole thing has kind of taken on a life of its own, and I guess I've got to thank my students for it, because my students are the ones that really pushed me to going down this road. And at some point, I finally listened to them and trusted them and went down this road. And boy, it's exploding. It's just growing like crazy. So if you want to see some of this stuff, get on my website, everybody, please. And it's granddaddyssecrets.com. Or you can just Google Granddaddy Secrets. You'll find it that way also. You'll see all sorts of things I got on there. And I got a blog on there. I've got a bunch of different interviews on there. I've got some books on there. Blogs on it. You know, I get tons and tons of great content and great advice on there. So definitely check out granddaddysecrets.com.
Okay. And if you look across the page, there's homepage, tutoring, a newsletter that goes out once a month, life coaching, and then there's a section about the author and his educational background. Then we have his books, and then we have his wonderful blog that I love reading. He's also available for speaking engagements. If you would like a motivational speaker, I recommend him highly. Media, he has been all over the media, and I'm so happy he's with us today. And his contact information is there, so you can reach him, send him an email. He loves hearing from people, don't you, Daniel?
I do, and I've been very, very fortunate. Well, you know, I used to get like emails from all over the country and sometimes all over the world saying that they love my book and they love my newspaper columns or blogs or whatever it is, articles. And then lately, I've been getting some other great contacts lately. One guy just invited me to the Olympic trials for wrestling. He's an Iowa wrestling coach. I mean, it was a great, great, awesome invite. And I had another woman. If anybody remembers the that book and movie, The Secret?
Well, there was a
sequel or a follow-up about the keys. And, there's a woman that was in that and just reached out to me and invited me to maybe take part in a project that she's doing in the educational field that will have global reach. So people have been reaching out to me of all sorts of stuff, and it's just like I said, I would have never dreamed of any of this stuff, you know, just 5 or 6 years ago when my book first came out. I had no way of knowing, you know, how this was going to grow like it's grown and how many people I've met. I mean, I've been having people lately that have been reaching out to me saying, can I just have a cup of coffee with you? And I'm like, yeah, all right, sure. So, you know, the last few weeks, I've been going out almost on a weekly basis and driving my car somewhere in Connecticut, and meeting people from Conky, and it's okay. been awesome.
Well, share with us a little bit about you're certified as a life coach. So I know you have 5 children and you have a wonderful, beautiful wife, and you're pretty busy with your family. I know you're writing newspaper columns, you write a blog, and you're rewriting books as you go along. When, dear, did you have time to become a certified life coach, and what does that mean?
Okay, Jane, something interesting I found out when I was writing the book. I mean, somebody said, how do you write a book and what you do? It's like eating an elephant, you know, one little chunk at a time. So what I did was, you know, every single morning at 4 a.m., I got up and just wrote a little bit. And a year later, I had this book. So it's the same exact thing with life coaching. What I did was I signed up on the Internet, found a certification course, and what I did was every single day, I just did a little bit on it for the last couple months, and recently I finished it, and I'm like, you know, that's kind of like the secret to getting things done, is you don't have to wait for everything to be perfect. You don't have to wait for yourself to have a big time block to be able to do something. Even though, you know, I tell people all the time, listen, get up 10 minutes earlier and spend 10 minutes a day just doing something that you want to do, some work towards some goal or something you want to accomplish, and like a year later, you can have a book. You know, a year later, you could have, let's say, a life coach certification. So so that's what I have now. I have a life coach certification. I took the exam, passed it, which I was like, hey, all right, cool. So I'm a certified life coach now, which kind of falls right into all the things that I'm doing, you know, between the mentoring, the tutoring, the coaching as a sports coach, the coaching I do on the academic levels. So some of my friends and people that I spend time with, they were like, hey, you know, you should be a life coach. So I was like, yeah, you know what, that's right. It fits right in there. So now I'm certified as a life coach, and it's something that, like, most of the stuff, like, in the course, I'm like, I wrote about that in my book or in my articles. So a lot of it wasn't new, but it did give me some valuable resources. It gave me some coaching models, and it gave me some, let's say, direction. On how to help people more efficiently. So now I am available for life coaching. I even got a young woman who was a doctoral student who started a team leadership company for girls. I'm working with her this fall. And we're going to be offering free coaching sessions up in the University of Connecticut, the UConn area. So we'll be offering, like, you know, people will come in, we'll do advertising, so maybe some of them might be scheduled, some of them might be walk-ins, and we're going to offer one free coaching session to allow people to help them, you know, move along a little bit quicker toward their goals, and if they really like what we're doing, then we'll be available for hire. So I'm pretty pumped about this new project of doing life coaching and knowing that I can help, you know, more than, let's just say, my high school students. I can help people in my community and, let's say, adults, which would be awesome. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, this is very exciting. We're going to take a break and hear from our very, very exciting sponsors. And when we come back with Daniel, we're going to talk, I would be curious to know, of all the things he does, what is his favorite thing? He has his tutoring, life coaching, writing, and speaking. And just between you and me, I think his favorite thing is going to be his family. So we'll be right back with Daniel Blanchard.
January's co-host, Connie Cockrell, the author of Mystery at the Fair, has been writing since 2011 after a challenge from her daughter. An eclectic writer, she's written mysteries, sci-fi, fantasy, and even a thriller. She has been included in 4 different anthologies and published on the e-zine Everyday Fiction. Connie continues to write and entertain with whatever comes into her head. You can find her books on most ebook retail sites. Paperback editions are also available. Be sure to visit her at www.conniesrandomthoughts.com, on Facebook, and on Twitter at Connie Cockrell. January is thrilled to be welcoming Dr. Nancy Irwin, who will be co-hosting on iHeartRadio with January Jones. As a doctor of psychology, clinical hypnotist, and author of U-Turn, Changing Direction in Midlife, Dr. Nancy is an agent for change. Many people believe that change can be scary, but she believes it can actually be creative and fun. She does know a thing or two about change because at age 44, she transitioned from a stand-up comedian to shrink. Oh, believe her, the road from comedy to mental health is very short indeed. Most fears are learned, and the good news is whatever we learned, we can unlearn. Smoking, overeating, fear of public speaking, test anxiety, what have you. On our show, we'll be discussing how you can dissolve that negative programming and free your inner winner. Change is inevitable. You can either affect it or accept it. Visit her site, drnancyirwin.com. What is AATH? The Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor is a nonprofit, member-driven international community of humor and laughter professionals and enthusiasts. AATH provides its members the education, cutting-edge resources, and supportive community they need to excel in the practice and promotion of healthy humor. AATH welcomes anyone who is interested in learning more about the application and benefits of therapeutic humor. Members include scholars, psychologists, counselors, nurses, social workers, physicians, educators, clergy, hospital clowns, and many others who incorporate humor in their life and work. AATH was created to disseminate information about humor and laughter, laughter play and well-being, provide a caring, supportive community of humor professionals and enthusiasts. Check out our AATH at www.aath.org today.
Welcome back with my guest and dear friend today, Daniel Blanchard. He's an educator, coach, tutor, author, speaker, life coach, columnist, blogger, and parent. Oh my gosh, he feels that it's his duty to influence our youth every chance he gets. Daniel lives with his wife Jennifer and their five children and family dog Daisy in Connecticut. Now, Daniel, I'm going to give you a tough question. I want to know, of all the things you do, and I know your family always comes first, but if you could only pick one thing, what would be your favorite? Tutoring, life coaching, writing, or speaking? What's the most favorite thing you love doing?
Well, that's a tough one.
I knew it would be.
I enjoy all of them. Every single one of them have their own, like, special little pleasures. So I like every single one of them. But if I was going to pick one.
Yeah.
You know what? I might lean toward just writing. And for a couple of reasons is that the writing has given me an opportunity of what, like, psychologists call metacognition. The writing gives me a chance. So I take my thoughts, hold them long enough, like in one place, such as like on a piece of paper or on the computer screen, and then think about like what I've written or think about my thoughts. So like, I think that that's made a huge, huge difference. And what a great tool that was thousands of years ago when people decided to try to like, you know, create this whole writing thing. And, I mean, it's funny because going way, way back, they said, oh, no, that's going to, like, ruin people's minds and ruin people because we're all storytellers. You know, that's how we pass on information. This writing thing's going to mess everything up. But, you know, I'm no Socrates or no great philosopher or anything like that. So writing's really benefited me. You know, I've been able to, like, hold my thoughts still long enough on a piece of paper to, like, look at them and really think about my thinking or think about what I wrote. And I think it's really, really made a huge difference in my life on the way I look at this world and on the things that I do. And it's been huge. So definitely, I think writing has shown me that I have something to say that's of value. So definitely writing. And then I'm glad I have other ways to do it.
And, you know, I totally agree with you because I feel of all the things I do, I've gotten such a great adrenaline rush from writing. I love the editing process. And let's face it, if you didn't start with writing, there'd be no newsletter, there'd be no coaching, there'd be no books, and there'd be no speaking. Don't you agree?
I totally agree. Totally agree. I mean, I write out all my speeches. So if I didn't write out all my speeches, then there wouldn't be any speeches. So I think writing has made a huge difference, and I've been very fortunate that I've had, you know, a lot of different ways of expressing what I write. Today it's awesome. Today it's all the different things you can do. You know, you can speak, you can do newsletters, you can do blogs.
Now, let me ask you a question. When you were growing up, were you interested in writing at all, or was that something that came later for you?
Oh, that came much. I was terrified of writing. I wasn't good at it. I was terrified of it, didn't want to do it. And I remember one time when I was at the University of Connecticut, I had to write a term paper for this class. It was called Politics in Africa, and there was a Professor Burke there, and he pulled me aside on, like, the last class. And he had my term paper in his hand, and he said, Dan, listen. He's like, I got your term paper here, and he's like, I can't give you a grade. All I can give you is an I. And I looked at him. I'm like, what? You know, because I'm always like in a rush to get things done. I'm like, an I? He goes, yeah. He goes, because I can't give you anything except an I unless I give you an F. He goes, and he looked at me, and he goes, my poor boy, nobody ever taught you how to write.
Oh,
and I was like, terrified. I was like, I felt like about an inch big. Mm-hmm. And I was like, he's right. I don't know how to write. I'm terrible at it. And then later on, I did rewrite that term paper and did pass the class. So I guess I got to thank Professor Burke for that. But I remember later on when I got hired as a teacher, I was like, I'm cranking on the interviews, doing awesome, going from one round to the next. And then I get to the final round where you sit there and you talk to the superintendent. And I walk in there, and there's a few other people that are in the final round. And superintendent goes, here's a piece of paper, here's a question, write an essay on this. And I'm thinking, I've done so well up to this point. And now I'm going to lose the job because this guy's going to see that I can't write. You know what I'm saying? And so I wrote the essay. It turned out halfway decent. And thank God he didn't look at it very closely. But it turned out halfway decent. And I ended up getting a job, became a teacher. And then next thing you know, a few years go by, and then I got my students telling me, you should write a book. You should write a book. I'm thinking, why? Why does this writing thing keep coming up? I'm not good at it. I don't like it. You know what I'm saying? But when I finally had the faith in my students that they must be seeing something that I'm not seeing and sat down and started writing, what I learned was that anybody can write. It doesn't really matter where you're at. All you got to do is just write and write and write and write and, of course, rewrite and rewrite and rewrite and rewrite.
Yeah.
Next, you get something that's pretty good. And you look at it and you go, dang, I wrote that. That looks pretty good. I can't believe I wrote that. Well, I mean, that's happened to me so many times where I've looked at my stuff and I'm like, who wrote that? I'm like, oh, that was me. I'm a pretty good writer,
there,
I guess.
Yeah,
or a pretty good rewriter.
Has gone through it, and I think the biggest trauma you ever have is the day you actually send the final manuscript to the publisher, and it's very traumatic. But you know what? This has been just fabulous, and I hope you'll come back and visit again. I love following your career and hearing about all your eclectic adventures. So it's been great.
Thank you, Jennifer.
To my wonderful listeners.
Show again.
Okay. To my wonderful listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our show today with Daniel. He's so much fun. I would love to welcome you to our wonderful No Wine world. When you can, sign on to my website, januaryjones.com. If you would like to be a guest or advertise, just go to info@januaryjones. We really love sharing our stories, our struggles, and our secrets for success. Remember my mantra. If you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, stop with the whining and then start smiling and then start sharing our show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my wonderful guest and dear friend today, Daniel Blanchard. This is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe as we close with music by Sorantos.
This is Sorantos, and you're listening to January Jones.
Things can change.
This is Sorantos. I hope you enjoyed January Jones' latest episode.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.